Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for listening this morning. I just got off the phone with Brandon Aki. He's a courtship consultant. Yeah, courtship consultant. Check him out at courtshipconsultant.com. And now I'm going to be talking with Nancy Scheman from the Child and Adolescent Bipolar Foundation. She coordinates all of the online support programming for families raising children, teen, and young adults with bipolar disorder, depression, or related disorders. In addition, she is responsible for the team of volunteers who answer emails for Bring Change to Mind, and that's bringchangetomind.org, the anti-stigma campaign founded by actress Glenn Close. Nancy has three teenage daughters, the oldest and youngest whom have bipolar disorder and were diagnosed at 9 and 10 respectively. Her personal and professional experience have given her extensive knowledge and understanding of mood disorders, treatments, parenting strategies, resources, and the challenges and barriers that can limit access to care. And I believe she's on the line right now. Good morning, Nancy.
Hey, Joy. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled that you're dedicating your show to bipolar disorder and related mood disorders.
Well, I think it's very important because there's a lot of myths about bipolar disorder, what it is, how do you get it, who has it, who's susceptible to it. So I'm always trying to do shows, trying to break a couple of myths that are out there. And particularly as a parent, when I read about your organization, I thought, wow, I really need to have this on because things happen starting when people are very young and they're just ignored or they're misdiagnosed. So I think that's why it's so important to have this show this morning. So now two of your daughters are have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. How did you find this out or what signs did you see from them? What were they exhibiting that there's something not right here?
Well, it's a really good question. I think it's something that a lot of parents struggle with. You know, for us, it was started with our oldest daughter when she was in first grade that we just had that parental gut instinct that something wasn't right. She appeared extremely sad, you know, depressed, so to speak. And we knew nothing about bipolar disorder, depression, certainly not in children, and really struggled with what to do, where to turn, and actually spent quite a few years working with clinicians trying to address our parenting style because the natural reaction was, well, we're just not capable of properly addressing our child's needs. And it really wasn't until we started to become more proactive and started doing research and questioning things and asking for additional evaluations and getting second and third and fourth opinions that there were certain common threads that kept bubbling to the top, and pretty soon this term mood disorder and bipolar disorder kept coming up, and it really took a long time. And then with our second child, I really didn't want to accept the diagnosis because I didn't feel I could go through it again. We had just gotten to a point of some level of stability, and I fought that really long and hard. But, you know, at some point, again, we realized that, you know, our daughter wasn't able to function properly. The personality that we'd known in her for so long, being a very upbeat, bubbly, happy, cheerful, social kid, was just gone. And it's been a struggle, and I certainly still question and constantly look at, are we using the right treatment methods? Thankfully, I'm in a job where I have access to a lot of information, and that's why I feel it's so important to help parents find the right information for them. But you know, I think the getting back to your original question, the key is when your child's behavior gets to be such that it's interfering with their ability to function in everyday normal life, you go from having a quirky kid or a challenging kid to a child who may have something going on that's more biologically based.
Well, one of the things, American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, just to give people an overview, and I'll be putting that link on my page, children and teenagers with bipolar disorder have manic and or depressive symptoms. So Nancy had just mentioned about her children being like depressive, and they're initially very, you know, outgoing. But there's also manic symptoms. Some of the manic symptoms include severe changes in mood, either unusually happy or silly, or very irritable, angry, agitated, or aggressive. unrealistic highs in self-esteem. For example, a teenager who feels all-powerful or like a superhero with special powers. A great increase in energy and the ability to go with little or no sleep for days without feeling tired. Increase in talking. The adolescents talk too much, too fast, changes topics too quickly and cannot be interrupted. Some of the depressive symptoms are irritability, depressed mood, persistent sadness, frequent crying, thoughts of death and suicide, loss of enjoyment and favorite activities, frequent complaints of physical illnesses such as headaches and stomach aches, low energy. So these are things that you can look out for. I'll be putting that link on my page. Now, you know, we have a lot of issues with people being misdiagnosed.
Yes.
You said you went to 3-4 different people. I mean, you know, people are working, they have jobs, they may have other children. How, as a parent, you know, this is why your organization is so important. As a parent, you know, you're working, you have other children, who do you turn to? The school systems may or may not be very helpful. They're overwhelmed. They have maybe one counselor to, which, you know, to 300, 500 kids. Where do you get the strength to keep going and keep trying to get, you know, other opinions?
You know, Joy, you've touched on so many issues that, you know, I couldn't even begin to do justice in the time that we have, but I want to make
yeah.
a couple of key points because these are all valid. A couple of things. One is, you know, the diagnostic process is very complex. This is being debated very heavily as clinicians are developing what's known as the DSM-5, which is the statistical manual, the diagnostic manual that clinicians use and where the criteria come from. And right now in the DSM-4, adult diagnostic criteria are being applied to kids, and a lot of people struggle with that. And some of the things that are coming up in the DSM-5 are, is bipolar disorder in children the same as it is in adults? And there's been a proposed additional diagnosis called temper dysregulation, which a lot of people have issues with, and there are plans to change the name. But the point is that there are other things going on with kids that can make them very, very ill. It may not neatly fit into the diagnosis of bipolar disorder where you have the distinct mania and the distinct depression, but you have kids that are having severe rages. We're not talking about, you know, the 5-year-old throwing himself on the ground and having a temper tantrum. We're talking about severely destructive rages, intense irritability. So there is a recognition that there are kids that are very sick who may not fit the bipolar diagnosis and therefore may need to be treated differently as far as medications go. But parents need to trust their gut and know that if they feel there's something wrong with their kid, there probably is. One of the hardest things to do is find a good trained clinician, a child and adolescent psychiatrist who really understands how these illnesses manifest in children. And I should point out, you know, our organization, the Child and Adolescent Bipolar Foundation, is not there to make a diagnosis. That would just be completely irresponsible on our part. But what we do is we try to guide parents to the right resources. We have a database so that they can find clinicians in their area, so that they can find treatment options, that they can do the research, that they can learn, and they can become educated so that they can make the right decision for their child. And you're right. If you are a working parent, it's very time-consuming, and you have phone calls from the school saying your kid's out of control. You need to come and get them. Or you have kids who will hold it together at school, and they come home and completely fall apart, and parents are at a loss for how to explain to the school why their child can't get their homework done, has trouble getting up in the morning and getting to school, all of these issues. So I think peer support is critical. You got to take care of yourself first so that you can take care of your child, and we offer online support programming for parents so that it's at the other end of their keyboard, finding the right clinician. You know, when you have an ill child, you can't always wait 2 weeks to go to a support group. You can't necessarily leave at 7 o'clock in the evening when your child is, you know, on the floor feeling suicidal. So we bring the support to parents. But you're right. I mean, the sad reality is there's a desperate shortage of clinicians, and there are a whole gambit of clinicians who don't believe that this can exist in kids. So I tell people, get the second opinion, get the third opinion. I realize it's hard and it's difficult to take off of work. We have families where one parent has to quit their job sometimes. So I don't have an easy answer for you, but I have a lot of empathy because I've lived it myself.
Right. Well, let's talk about the fact that you have two children. Are they both daughters? I'm sorry, I said daughters. But
I actually have three daughters. Two of them have diagnosis.
You have three daughters, but two have diagnosis.
And
yeah.
One's my sandwich girl stuck in the middle.
Well, according to the Mayo Clinics, I just want to read some of the risk factors that increase developing bipolar disorder include having blood relatives, such as a parent or sibling with bipolar disorder. So this kind of fits your situation. But there are some people who maybe don't have anyone in the family and it still could be diagnosed, the child could still be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Periods of high stress, drug or alcohol abuse, major life changes such as a death of a loved one, and usually being diagnosed at an early age. They may have other things going on, ADHD, other anxiety disorders, PTSD.
Yes.
So there's not just one thing sometimes. And also we have to understand that it can be a chemical situation, that it's not, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like, Nancy, help me out here.
Again, you bring up a really good point, and I very much appreciate the research that you've clearly done on this, because one of the most important things that people need to understand is that mental illnesses are biologically based illnesses. These are not things where you just need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and buck up
exactly.
And you
That's
can get
why
through
this. The biological, yes.
Right. That we have, there are several chemicals in our brain, serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine, which in a perfect world work in synergy, and they help to modulate our moods, and we run along. You know how you sometimes feel anxious before, for example, maybe before you do a talk show or a kid before they do a piano recital. You have a certain surge of emotions that causes you some anxiety, but it's modulated. You know what it's caused by. When you have bipolar disorder, these mood swings come out of left field, and you may feel incredibly panicked or incredibly energized, or you may have that fight or flight type of emotion in you for no reason. And it is because those brain chemicals are out of balance. And medications are designed to try to look at the reasons why those brain chemicals are out of balance and try to modulate them. And there are also are more and more, not so many studies, but anecdotal reports of non-pharmaceutical interventions that can also help to modulate things. So it is important that people understand that it's a chemical imbalance. It's not a character defect.
Now, what do you do? You mentioned there are some pharmaceuticals that are available.
Mm-hmm.
There are therapy, going to speak with a psychiatrist and a psychologist. I've seen that in researching about this, that people may have to go to both, one to help manage the pharmaceutical aspect. What are some medicines that are available to people if they do finally find out, okay, my child has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, what are some of the pharmaceuticals that are available to them?
Well, there are a classification of medications called mood stabilizers, and a lot of these originally were developed to treat epilepsy, and it was found that they also had mood stabilizing qualities. Lithium is considered sort of the gold standard. It's been around for more than 30 years. It's probably the most studied medication, and so has a very long track record of clinical data and research behind it. Depakote, Lamictal, Tegretol, Trileptal, these are all in the classification of mood stabilizers. And it's really, our brains are like a walking chemistry set. And so unfortunately, there isn't a nice, neat little blood test or an x-ray that can be done that says, oh, this is where your brain situation is, and so therefore you need this medication. A lot of it is trial and error. Antidepressants can be used. Generally, they're used very cautiously because without other mood stabilizers on board, they can throw a patient into mania. However, they do sometimes have an appropriate place. My kids use them during the fall and winter months in very small doses because they tend to fall into the depressive range. It's a seasonal situation.
Now, what about the side effects, though? You know, parents may be like, I don't want to give because, I mean, have these been studied on children or they only study on adults? So, I mean, you just mentioned about even the diagnosis, just the textbook diagnosis is mainly for adults and they're being placed on top of children. Now we have medicines that were probably tested on adults.
Well,
are they just given at a lower dose or have they been clinical trials on children with these different medicines?
There are not a lot of clinical trials with kids. It's not easy to find people that want to do them, and it's not easy to get funding to have those studies done. So a lot of medications are prescribed what's called off-label, which means they don't have FDA approval in being used in children. There are several medications that have received FDA approval for kids, often like 12 and up. And this is really a very personal struggle that parents have to have. I tell people, you've got to weigh the benefit versus the risk. If you have a child who is severely suicidal, you have to consider, is it better to use a medication that may help bring them out of that suicidal thinking but may have some other side effects, or are you better to try to use other interventions? And you bring up some very important points. Therapy is a very key part of this. Medications alone can only do so much. And I always talk about it being sort of a triangle. And, you know, one corner is the medication side. Another is the therapeutic side. And the other is the lifestyle side. Sleep is probably the biggest trigger. And the more you can get good sleep hygiene, easier said than done, especially with adolescents.
Yes.
That really is a trigger. I see it in my kids all the time. If they have a couple of days where they're up late and they don't get enough sleep, we are almost guaranteed to have a crash. Diet, exercise, getting outside in the sunlight, these are all
Is sugar something that's an issue, you know, feeding? We have this whole issue of childhood obesity in our culture here, and people are eating fast food, high-fat, high-sugar things, soda. Are any of those triggers, do you think? I mean, there's some people probably believe that that might be a cause.
You know, I certainly couldn't make a clinical decision on that. I would say that sugar may get more of a bad rap than it needs to be. But in general, we do know that things like deficiencies in B vitamins, deficiencies in folate can cause mood issues. So certainly eating a healthy diet that has a broad range of nutrients, it never hurt and probably helps. And again, I have three teenagers. It's not easy to do. And we are, with my youngest, trying to do some non-pharmaceutical interventions in addition to the pharmaceutical medications. So I think these are all areas that parents need to take into consideration. And this applies to adults, too. I'm not speaking just about kids.
Well, let me mention real quickly on your website, just so people know, that millions of people suffer from different types of mood disorders. And one of the things that you talked about here on your website is that many famous and successful people suffer from mood disorders. Winston Churchill, Princess Diana, Tip Gore, Abraham Lincoln, George O'Keefe, Sylvia Plath, Bonnie Raitt, Mike Wallace, Margot Kidder, Brooke Shields, Drew Carey, Rosie O'Donnell, just to name a few. So you should not consider yourself a loser simply because you have a biochemical illness. And again, I want to emphasize biochemical illness. And as Nancy said, it's not just something you can just snap out of or, you know, go to a party and feel better or, you know, this is something that it really is out of your control. It's a biochemical illness. So please, if you're noticing any of the symptoms, even within yourself, because maybe as an adult you could have bipolar disorder. I mean, I've read a lot of articles where people didn't know as a child, but as an adult they were diagnosed.
Yes, we see more and more reports that when they go and study adults who have a diagnosis, most of them report having had symptoms back into their childhood.
So what age do you, what's the youngest that you have encountered having bipolar disorder?
Yeah, that's a question I really don't like to answer. I mean, we have families on our support groups who have kids as young as five. I think the challenge is, you know, this is you're diagnosing based on behaviors. And in a young child, they don't have the emotional maturity, nor do they have the language to be able to explain what's going on. So it takes a really skilled clinician to be able to work with that child to identify what's going on. And it can be done. You know, there are things through play therapy, through art therapy. There are ways that you can kind of hone in. But some of it's a bit of a wait and see, and it's very difficult. I have one volunteer who works for me whose child is, I believe, now six. And, you know, they've been through multiple hospitalizations, and the diagnosis keeps changing, and it's very, very frustrating. There's clearly something wrong. It's a question of what is it?
What is it? Now, one of the things that has come up recently is a mental health parity for health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Has that improved? Have the members, people come to you and said that's great that now the health insurance companies have to provide mental health if they're providing physical health? How has that changed? Have you seen an increase in people getting help?
There's been some increase. There are still loopholes, you know, so that certain self-funded plans or plans that insure less than 50 people may be exempt to it, and some of that's being addressed through state laws. One thing that we have seen that's very encouraging is the, it's not parity, but with the health care bill that was passed, families now can keep their adult child on their insurance until age 26. And this
yes.
is hugely beneficial because a lot of times, because of the things these kids have gone through, they're behind in their emotional maturity and where they're at. And they may not even finish college till they're 24 or 25, and now they've got to start looking for a job, and they're on medications. They're doing pretty well, but they need the coverage. So there's been a huge collective sigh of relief coming from a lot of families in that regard.
Now, your organization has a girls-only site. That's interesting.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
We recently redid our website last February, and with the help of a wonderful colleague of ours, Tracy Anglada, who has her own site, which is www.bpchildren.com, and hers is focused mostly on a site for children. She worked with us and wrote that section, and because we felt that there were significant issues that were unique to girls, you know, particularly in the years of puberty. And we have had people ask if we're going to do a for boys only section too. So I think down the road, especially if we can get some funding, that might be something we address. But we've really been glad to be able to refer you know, pre-adolescents and adolescents and older teens to that site, and have had a lot of positive feedback from parents.
Well, we're talking about donating. People can donate to your organization. Your website is bpkids.org,
yes.
And they can go to bpkids.org/donate. You can donate $50, $5, $10. They really would appreciate your help. They also have podcasts on there about bipolar disorder, different quizzes that you can take, a fact about just general information about bipolar disorder. As Nancy mentioned earlier, they have online support. You don't have to physically go somewhere. There are online support groups that you can connect with, and that's also on the website. If you go to bpkids.org and click on the Connect link, you'll find the support groups. Also, professional resources that are on there. You can look up by your state, by your zip code, within a particular radius, and also what type of help you're looking for, a therapist, a summer camp, a social worker, legal services, community state resources. One of the things, if people are listening, I really want to encourage, again, to understand that this is a biochemical issue, and that if you have a church, if you have a Girl Scout group, a Boy Scout group, any of these local resources, a recreation center, you might want to post some information at those places about bipolar disorder so that people can understand, one, they're not the only person going through something like this, two, that there are resources out there to help them, and the Child and Adolescent Bipolar Foundation is one of them. So please check out bpkids.org. Now, Nancy, in closing, as a parent, what are some helpful words that you can give to other parents who may be, you know, just battling this situation right now?
Well, I think the most important thing is to know you're not alone. It's a very isolating illness, and you can feel very stigmatized, and it's very easy to look around you and feel like everybody else's lives are just chugging along great, and yours is not. I also tell people this is a marathon, it's not a sprint, and you need to be patient. I've learned more patience than I ever thought I had, and I still have a ways to go, but it is a chronic illness, it's cyclical in nature, and it is going to be with you for life. But the good news is, you know, if your child is diagnosed at 8, 10, 12, even 14 years old, you've got some time as a parent to work with them, to help them, to get them to a place where they can accept their illness and learn to manage it rather than allowing the illness to manage them. I think it's much harder when the diagnosis finally comes at 17 and you have a child who very naturally is wanting to, you know, spread their wings and fly, and they may not be as receptive to getting the help, to accepting the diagnosis. Not to say that it's not possible. I don't want to discourage anybody who's facing it with a child of that age, and we do have a lot of help and support for families with teens. We have some support groups that are for parents going through the teen years and even the transition years of 18 and beyond. But just to know that, you know, this too is, it's not the cards that we wanted to be dealt, but if it wasn't this, it would be something else. And we can get through it, and we get through it together, and we get through it one day at a time. Sometimes it's 1 hour at a time. But there are a lot of great success stories out there. I can tell you that I never thought that I would see my oldest daughter graduate from high school. She just got her first acceptance letter to a college.
Wonderful.
She's done really well. And
yes,
that gives me a lot of hope for my younger daughter, who's also doing much better than she was a few years ago. And so just hang on to that and surround yourself with people who can offer you those stories of hope. We even have a message board on our site called Stories of Hope. So on those dark days, you go there and read.
You can check that out. Yeah, check out, again, her website is bpkids.org. You can go there to find resources in your area, support groups, online support groups, also professional resources. And also you can donate to this wonderful organization. And one of the things I mentioned earlier is talking with your church, your recreation center, your Boy Scout, Girl Scout groups, and maybe posting, printing out some of this information there so that other parents be like, oh, that's what's happening? You know, maybe that's what's happening. And the person can and finally get some help for their child and or for themselves. As we mentioned, a lot of people are going through their lives and not until they become adult then are diagnosed. Not until they become an adult they are diagnosed. And again, this is a biochemical issue. So that's something to understand. It's just kind of out of your control, but that you can get help to control it, you know, and continue living your life. Thank you so much, Nancy, for coming on this morning.
Thank you, Joy. If I could just put in one more plug for information, if people don't feel that they can support us financially, our organization is going to be competing in the Pepsi Refresh contest starting November 1st, and we need people to vote for us every day, three ways.
Okay.
You can go to www.bpkids.org/Pepsi to learn more now, and starting November 1st, you can vote for us. But that's a great way to help without having to open your pocketbook one penny. So, and I really appreciate your giving the time to endorse our organization. We work very hard for families, and we're out there for anybody who's struggling or has questions.
Well, thank you so much. I think it's an important issue, and it's just misunderstood, and so I always try to educate myself and others about what's going on in the world. So I just want to thank you for coming on. I wish you much success, and I'll definitely
thank
post
you.
The links about the Pepsi on the website, okay?
Great. Thanks so much. Take care.
You. Have a wonderful Saturday.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening this morning. This was the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. We were talking with Nancy Scheman from the Child and Adolescent Bipolar Foundation, and you can check out their website, bpkids.org. And as Nancy mentioned, if you don't have money, you can still vote for them, a Pepsi Refresh contest that's going on where they'll be able to get a lot of resources to build up the organization. I'll be posting those links online. Next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern, October 16th, I'll be speaking with author Terry Williams about Black Pain. That's her book, Black Pain, African Americans and Depression. And after that, we'll be talking about celiac disease, a little unknown disease that you could be suffering with, be allergic to certain types of food, have really severe reactions. So tune in next Saturday, October 16th at 11 a.m. Eastern. Later on in the month, I'll be speaking with Khalil Gibran Muhammad, author of Condemnation of Blackness in America, and singer Buika. Thank you so much.